Salam, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last month, Donald Trump elevated Ajit Pai to chair the Federal Communications Commission. Not requiring Senate approval, Pai's promotion did not receive much attention. Pai was appointed to the FCC by Barack Obama in 2012, and since his appointment, he's been very busy. He's a former lawyer for Verizon, and he's reversed an Obama administration order to allow internet service providers to provide discounted high-speed internet access to low-income families. He's also rescinded a report documenting the success of a program that helped tens of thousands of schools and libraries obtain high-speed internet access. He withdrew a federal case to cap phone rates in prison, and in December, he said net neutrality's days are numbered. Net neutrality ensures all traffic on the internet is treated equal and prevents service providers from speeding up or slowing down certain websites. So what does this mean for democracy, free speech, and consumer rights? Today we're joined by two guests to talk about what we can expect under Ajit Pai. Jessica Gonzalez is Deputy Director and Senior Counsel at Free Press. That's an organization that fights to save a free and open internet. Based on what Pai has already done, Free Press says he is falling in line with the Trump administration and favoring the same powerful corporations that threaten net neutrality and other consumer protections. And Jessica joins us on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Jessica. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, Rose.
Hi, thanks for joining us. We're also joined by Clint Finley, a writer with Wired.com, where he focuses on technology, policy, and telecommunications. And Clint has written about the FCC and Ajit Pai, and he joins us from Portland, Oregon. Hi, Clint. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Great to have you. I want to start off by talking about net neutrality, because that is starting to get a lot of attention. And one of the biggest concerns about Ajit Pai is that he opposes net neutrality. So before we dive in and talk about that, let's get a basic refresher on what net neutrality is and how it affects access to websites. Jessica, let's start off with you.
Sure. So the basic concept behind net neutrality is that internet service providers like Comcast and AT&T and Verizon cannot control, you know, cannot speed up service to certain websites because they make special deals with them. And that is the very basis of the democratizing nature of the internet, where once we pay the hefty fees to get online, we can go anywhere and see any lawful content or websites that we want. So too is it true that speakers and content creators and small business people and people who traditionally don't have a voice in mainstream media are able to share their stories, to sell their wares, and to participate in democracy and organize for change.
And Clint, what would you add to that?
I would also add that net neutrality generally means also that you can't, that the providers can't charge you extra to visit certain websites. So for example, that they couldn't charge you more to stream NPR than they charge you to watch Fox News online, or vice versa.
And remind us what happened when we saw so much activism around net neutrality rules, which resulted in the FCC adopting net neutrality rules on a partisan 3-2 vote back in 2015. Clint, can you tell us about just the massive amount of grassroots activism we saw around that in 2015?
Yeah, there was a giant outpouring after the FCC had proposed a set of rules that a lot of people interpreted would have allowed what's called paid prioritization. So that's that idea that certain websites might be delivered faster than others based off of the deals they make. A huge number of people spoke out about that, and that kind of tipped the hand of the FCC to try to adopt these. To adopt the more strict rules that they ended up adopting later.
And Jessica, can you tell us about, you know, what stands out for you when you think back to that time when there was so much activism around net neutrality?
I think what was incredible about that outpouring, there was over 4 million people who sent comments. That's more people than those who reached out to the FCC about the Janet Jackson nipple at the Super Bowl. Wow. Years and years ago. And so here we have an American public who got informed on this issue and who understood that their communications rights were at stake and reached out on a relatively wonky telecommunications issue to make their voices heard. And so I think, you know, it's interesting to me because inside the Beltway, this is a partisan issue. But outside the Beltway, when you talk to Republicans, Democrats, whomever, and explain net neutrality, we all understand that we don't, that our internet service providers, are sometimes, we only have one option, that they're at near monopoly status in a lot of regions, and that there has to be some rules of the road to ensure that they treat us fairly. And so it's actually, there's bipartisan support for net neutrality across the country.
Let's talk about where Ajit Pai stands on net neutrality. We did contact the FCC to find out if the commissioner, or the chair, or one of the commissioners can join us, but they said no one's available. Ajit Pai has said that net neutrality's days are numbered, and since he has become commissioner, he did give an interview to CNBC, and he wasn't completely specific about where he stands. He was asked, do you think Congress or the FCC will act on net neutrality? And he said, quote, both houses of Congress are actively considering that issue, and I certainly stand ready to assist them in their efforts. The other thing they're considering, which is important, I think, is including broadband as a part of an infrastructure package, and I vigorously propose that. So, Jessica, based on what Ajit Pai has said about net neutrality, I mean, what should we think? Where does he stand on it?
It's a great question. Here's the thing. I think it's pretty clear that Ajit Pai has a history of being against net neutrality. He voted against the order in 2015. He wrote a very lengthy dissent explaining why he didn't agree with the decision. But right now there's a bit of positioning going on between him and Congress. No one, because of the outpouring of public support and the general understanding that we want net neutrality, no one wants to be the one to take it away. And so the framing that I see members of Congress and Ajit Pai shifting to is that they support net neutrality, but they don't like the way the FCC got there. And so what they're talking about there is the legal basis for which the FCC based net neutrality on. What they did at the time was to reclassify broadband internet service providers as common carriers. So in other words, it was kind of like them saying, look, internet access is a utility, and as such, the FCC has authority to put these rules together and to enforce them. And so Ajit Pai, what I see him doing and what I see Congress doing is saying, we love net neutrality, but secretly undermining that by going after the legal basis for net neutrality. And so he looks like a good guy. He can say flowery things about net neutrality while at the same time completely undermining it by going into the weeds and making this a super wonky issue that it really doesn't need to be. The truth is, if you oppose the legal justification for net neutrality and seek to unravel it, you are unraveling net neutrality. And at the same time, not only are you undermining the net neutrality rules, but you're also undermining a lot of great stuff that the FCC has done in the past couple years to expand affordable internet access to low-income people. So the same reclassification that the FCC did in 2015 supported the FCC's modernization of its Lifeline program in 2016, which Ajit Pai also opposed. And the notion behind that modernization was to help expand Lifeline, which for several decades has supported subsidies for low-income telephone service for low-income people, and to modernize that to also allow consumers, low-income consumers, to choose to apply that subsidy to their broadband. The other thing the FCC did last year on the basis of the reclassification of broadband service as a utility was to create some basic rules to protect consumers' privacy online. And so when he goes after, when he tries to take the argument and the debate away from net neutrality and into this somewhat wonkier, like, legal discussion about how the FCC got there. He undermines a whole series of really important consumer protections, and it's dangerous because he does so with a smile, pretending that he's a net neutrality champ.
And Clint, you wrote an article for Wired called "This is the Year Donald Trump Kills Net Neutrality." So how do you see it?
Right. Well, something I wanted to add to what Jessica said is that the FCC had been trying to pass, had actually already passed net neutrality regulations years ago, but Verizon sued over them, and that is why the FCC ended up having to reclassify broadband providers as utilities, to, like Jessica said, to get that legal basis for the enforcement. So if that gets overturned, the courts have already decided that the FCC can't enforce net neutrality rules unless those providers are classified as utilities. So if Chairman Pai is successful in overturning the Title II, or if Congress overturns Title II, then it will take an act of Congress to enforce the net neutrality rule.
And and again, just another reason why people should care about this, net neutrality prevents your provider. So let's say you're on a cell phone right now listening to this show. It would prevent, say, AT&T or Verizon from speeding up or slowing down certain apps or websites. So this is really important. That's why we saw so much grassroots activism back in 2015. And we're talking about it today. Donald Trump's new chair of the FCC, Ajit Pai, has said that net neutrality's days are numbered, and we did invite the FCC to join us today, but they weren't able to join us. We are joined by Clint Finley, a writer for Wired, where he focuses on technology, policy, and telecommunications, and Jessica Gonzalez, deputy director and senior counsel at Free Press. That's an organization that fights to save a free and open internet. So I wanted to start by talking about net neutrality because that's really important and it's getting a lot of attention. A lot of us have never heard of Ajit Pai until now. He was appointed to the FCC commission by Barack Obama back in 2012. He spent many years as a lawyer for the government and also Verizon. Jessica, what else do we need to know about Ajit Pai? Who is he?
Well, I don't know him so well personally, but I've followed him very closely for the past few years when, as he's been a commissioner. And I can tell you, he has consistently voted against the interests of the American public, all the while doing so with a smile and paying lip service to the very important issues that we all care about. For instance, he's expressed a concern about bridging the digital divide and has talked a good game about helping poor people and people of color connect to the internet, but his votes have consistently undermined those stated goals. He voted against Lifeline modernization to help bring affordable internet access to poor people. He voted against E-Rate modernization, and E-Rate is a program that helps connect schools and libraries to high-speed internet access and devotes a significant amount of its funds to schools and libraries in low-income neighborhoods. He recognized the injustice of the exorbitant rates that prison inmates and detainees were paying. Meanwhile, prison phone companies and prisons were colluding, and prisons were getting kickbacks for charging inmates up to $17 for a 15-minute phone call. Really, really egregious practices that he's agreed are unjust. But at the same time, he's dissented and written lengthy dissents opposing reforms to help regulate the rates and fees that prisons charge inmates. So What we know about him is that he wants to be friendly. He wants to be seen as a people's champion, but his actions speak louder than words, and they're pretty rotten.
And he's done a lot in the last month. Clint, what explains some of these votes? Jessica was just talking about Lifeline. This was established back in 1985. It's a $2 billion subsidy that allows low-income families to shave $9.25 off of their phone and broadband internet bills every month. Why does he oppose this?
So in his blog post explaining it, and I'll mention also that initially he offered essentially no explanation at all for this move. It was announced rather cryptically on a Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. In an announcement that just said that they were rolling back midnight regulations passed by the FCC. That announcement did not even specify what regulations were being rolled back, and it was incumbent on journalists to essentially look through the FCC's filings on their website to try to figure out what he was referring to. So it wasn't until there was a huge outcry that he offered any explanation at all for the decision. And what it boils down to is that he's afraid that there's not sufficient accountability for those programs to keep them from engaging in, say, fraud, where a service provider might sign up people who don't exist and just essentially build a government for those people, or situations where people who are not actually low-income families sign up and get this discount. That said, he hasn't really offered any alternative program, which is why this comes off looking particularly cruel and out of line with his statements about closing the digital divide.
And again, this allows families to shave $9.25 off of their phone bill every month.
Right, or their broadband bill. So what he did, as Jessica was mentioning earlier, was that he reversed a decision to allow a certain number of broadband providers to participate in this as well, so that people could get a discount on internet access. So he didn't outright reject those companies or those organizations' participation in the program, but he reversed a decision to allow them in. So they're all, I believe, listed as pending applications now. So if I'm not mistaken, and Jessica might know more about this than I do, there are no broadband providers currently approved by the Lifeline program.
Is that right, Jessica?
By the FCC. That's correct.
All right. And so do you have anything else to add about why he would vote against this program?
You know, I think this is a game. And I'm frankly rather sick of the waste, fraud, and abuse argument against Lifeline. The commission in the past 5 years has undertaken several orders to address this. They've reduced the Lifeline spend from, you know, by almost $500 million. And this is a very lean and mean government program that does a lot to directly address the main barrier to bridging the digital divide, which is cost. That is the number one factor for folks who are poor or who are people of color. It's the number one reason they're not online.
What is this current status of the digital divide? This is something that Al Gore and Bill Clinton talked about a lot in the late 90s, and we're just up the road from Silicon Valley. We don't really talk much about the digital divide anymore. Jessica, what is the current status of that?
There are 69 million Americans who are without high-speed or even regular speed home internet access today.
Wow, 69 million.
69 million. These people are disproportionately poor, black, brown, veterans, and people with disabilities. It's stark, and it's very, very discouraging, especially as we are seeing everything move online and education move online. I used to be a teacher, and I have a ton of friends who are still in low-income neighborhoods, and they're trying to prepare their kids, their students, to take exams online, standardized testing, and their students are way behind. Not only do they show up to school hungry sometimes, not, you know, with shoes two sizes too big, they're showing up with absolutely no ability to complete homework assignments, no ability to practice for their exams. And so we're setting our kids further back, and it's having a disproportionate impact on low-income people and people of color in particular.
And then to add to that, I was watching a story last night from the PBS NewsHour about the rural schools in the country that don't have internet access. 20% of rural schools lack access, and the E-Rate program helps schools pay for access. And they focused on a school in Mississippi. And, I mean, when you looked at the poor neighborhood in Mississippi and the wealthy neighborhood in Mississippi near Jackson, it was such a stark difference when you looked at the lack of computers, the lack of internet access, and what the kids had access to. Where does Ajit Pai stand on the E-rate program for schools, Jessica?
Well, we're not, he voted against the E-rate modernization order a couple of years back that was extremely successful. Part of his news dump that Clint referred to a few minutes ago, where on a Friday at 4 p.m. he released a bunch of Trump-style executive orders, not exactly executive orders, but the FCC's version of executive orders, doing all kinds of bad things. And one of the things that he did that is so puzzling and troubling to me is that he rescinded an E-rate progress report that showed just how very successful the E-rate modernization has been. And so there was no legally binding effect. There was no, you know, sort of political reasoning to get rid of this report other than to delete facts that were inconvenient to his opposition to E-rate modernization and a great program that's connected so many schools and libraries and poor neighborhoods. So I'm watching with a close eye. Commissioner O'Reilly, has released some troubling messaging suggesting that he will be taking a hard look at E-rate, even though it's been incredibly successful. So we haven't seen anything solid from them other than deleting facts, but I'm concerned. Hmm. I'm concerned about the future of that program as well.
And President Obama appointed Ajit Pai to the FCC in 2012. Clint, why did Obama pick Ajit Pai?
I'm not sure why he picked Chairman Pai specifically, but part of what's going on there is that federal agency rules require that there's a balance between the two parties in an agency. So at the FCC, there are five commissioners, and only three of them can be from the same party. So when President Obama had to fill one of those seats, he couldn't pick another Democrat. He had to pick a Republican. And so presumably part of why he picked Mr. Pai was that he believed he would be confirmed by the Senate. So although Chairman Pai didn't have to be confirmed by the Senate to become the chairman, his membership as a commissioner did have to get approved by the Senate when he was first confirmed to the commission.
Jessica, I didn't find a statement by Obama when Ajit Pai was appointed. The White House just put out a release with his resume. And we mentioned that Ajit Pai is a former lawyer for Verizon. He also had positions at the Justice Department and the Senate Judiciary Committee, where he worked under the leadership of then committee chairman Senator Jeff Sessions, who is now the Attorney General. So how do you explain Obama's decision to appoint Ajit Pai to the FCC?
Well, I think there's a process that I think rather few people know about outside the Beltway for confirmation or for appointments of commissioners to the FCC and a few other agencies where what happens is when there's a president who's a Democrat, the Senate Republicans are the ones who recommend someone to the president, and typically those recommendations are honored. The same is true when a Republican is president. The Democratic senators offer up their suggestions, and so I'm assuming that that is the process, and the fact that Chairman Pai was a Senate staffer and was in fact very tight with our new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, probably contributed to his elevation.
Today we are talking about the new Federal Communications Commissioner, Ajit Pai. He has been very busy in his 1 month in office. And we're joined today by Jessica Gonzalez, Deputy Director and Senior Counsel at Free Press. Clint Finley is a writer with Wired. And we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about the FCC, net neutrality, and what this appointment means for the open internet, democracy, and free speech? This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is your call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion, or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may post a comment or question on the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of Donald Trump's new national security advisor, Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. And we will talk about yesterday's forced evacuation of the remaining Native Americans and their allies at Standing Rock. 10 people, mostly journalists, were reportedly arrested. In fact, thanks to Facebook Live, I was watching it yesterday and watched some of this happen in real time. We'll talk about how the media have covered the struggle of Native Americans joining forces to oppose the $3.8 billion Dakota Access oil pipeline. ABC News recently reported that oil could be flowing within the next 2 weeks. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea for us, you can drop us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about what is happening, the changes that are happening at the Federal Communications Commission. Last month, Donald Trump elevated Ajit Pai to chair the FCC. He was appointed to the FCC by Barack Obama in 2012. He's a former lawyer for Verizon. He's also a former lawyer for the United States government. He has reversed an Obama administration order to allow ISPs to provide discounted high-speed internet access to low-income families and schools. And in December, he said net neutrality's days are numbered. Net neutrality ensures that all traffic on the internet is treated equal. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think this all means for democracy, free speech, and consumer rights? So many people now rely on the internet for such a wide range of issues. And if you have any questions about the importance of net neutrality, or if you work on these issues, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jessica Gonzalez is deputy director and senior counsel at Free Press. They fight to save a free and open internet. And Clint Finley is a writer for Wired, where he focuses on these issues. We have an email from Rob who says, since Mr. Pai worked as an employee of Verizon, could he be forced to recuse himself when he votes on issues impacting that company? What about that, Clint?
I might have to defer to Jessica on that one, but I don't think that would be required. I mean, just because he worked there, he doesn't mean he has, you know, that he's an investor there or has stock there.
Can you tell us about some recent decisions the FCC made that affect companies like Verizon and AT&T? I mean, those of us who have cell phones don't really have many choices. It's, what is it, Verizon, AT&T, maybe one more?
Sprint and T-Mobile.
Okay, so about four.
Yeah, those are the big four, yeah. So one of the big decisions recently was there's a sub-issue within net neutrality called zero rating, which is this, which is when a carrier exempts certain websites or apps from your data limit. So AT&T and Verizon both have some version of this. Verizon exempts its Go 90 video streaming service from your data limit on Verizon. AT&T exempts its DirecTV Now service. But what that means is that that's great for the customers who want to watch those services, but competitors such as Netflix or Dish's Sling TV have to pay Verizon and AT&T if they want the same treatment. So the previous FCC had decided that that was anti-competitive, but one of the first things that Chairman Pai did was overturn that decision as well. That was part of the same news dump as the Lifeline issue. So that's one of the biggest things that he's done so far, in my opinion.
And related to this, we have an email from Doug who says, what about zero rating, where providers allow some data to pass freely without counting against a customer's bandwidth limit, while other types of traffic count against a limit and cost more? Isn't this discrimination? And can someone sue providers on this basis?
I don't know if they can be sued on this basis, but like I said, I do consider that a net neutrality issue, and it is one that the FCC has decided not to pursue as of now. So it will take either some regulation passed by Congress at this point, or a new FCC before that issue gets any new traction, I believe.
And Jessica, how would you answer the question from Rob about Chairman Pai working as an employee of Verizon, and could he be forced to recuse himself when he votes on issues that affect the company?
Well, to be perfectly fair, it's been a little while since Chairman Pai was with Verizon, although he's done them a lot of favors since he's been at the commission, certainly. If there was a specific issue that he worked on as a lawyer, that is before the commission, arguably he would have to recuse himself, or else he would breach, legal ethics rules.
And can you tell us about his time at Verizon? What stands out for you?
I don't know much about his time at Verizon, but I would love to add to what Clint had to say about zero rating.
Sure.
So one thing that I think we should all be asking ourselves is whether or not data caps are fair, and why we have data caps, and in particular, why we have data caps over wired services where there's not really any need to worry about congestion or network management. And I think that's the real problem with closing an inquiry into data caps. I thought the FCC Wheeler administration under President Obama did a fairly good job in the report that was the report that was closed out when Ajit Pai closed out the zero rating inquiry, in sort of laying out the various forms of zero rating and setting a table for us to have a conversation. And I've never said that we should necessarily have a complete ban on zero rating, but I do think the FCC should have the authority to look at each instance on a case-by-case basis and determine whether or not internet service providers are taking advantage of their customers or giving an unfair advantage to their own content. For instance, this is something that AT&T is doing, where they're giving, their customers access to their own content. That's deeply troubling.
And for people who aren't familiar with this, what are data caps?
So data caps is the limits on, you pay for unlimited access to it. Most of us have, or a lot of us have, these unlimited data plans, but the truth is, in most instances, we have a limited number of data that we can use per month. And so if we, what zero rating does is it says, well, you have this limited amount of data, but we're going to exempt this certain group of services, either because we have a business relationship or because we think that this attracts customers to our service over others. And we're going to say that those services don't count against your data cap. And so it's a way to, on the consumer end, it looks appealing, but what it really does is it creates a situation where, folks are attracted to that, but the real problem is why do we have these limits? And to the extent they're necessary, should the FCC have a role in examining that and helping consumers protect themselves.
Right. And just a tip, because I learned about this personally recently, if you go over your time allotment, you might want to turn your cellular data button off, and then you can use it. You have to connect to a Wi-Fi. You can use it unlimited. And then if you have the new iPhone, on that same section at the very bottom, for some reason, it grabs even more data. So be sure to also turn that off. because then you'll be charged. So just a couple of little tips there. Do you have any other tips, Jessica, for people who are concerned about going over and don't want to pay more?
Oh, that's a good question. Definitely get on the Wi-Fi, definitely monitor closely, and definitely call and complain. I do it all the time. my internet service provider and my wireless provider hear from me on a regular basis, and I do think it makes a difference if they know that you're watching them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to this point, we have a caller on the line who couldn't stay on and wanted to say, how are other countries addressing these issues? And I was just reading last night about how our speed and price compares to the rest of the world. And we are at the lower end of the spectrum. When you look at maps, Hong Kong, Tokyo, and Seoul, I mean, they just blow us away when it comes to speed. And according to PBS, New Yorkers pay about $55 for 25 megabits per second, nearly double what people in London, Bucharest, Romania pay. Why does this happen, Clint?
So I can speak to the issue in the UK. A big part of what the difference there is that there's more competition, in that the owners of the cables essentially have to lease them to other companies, so that just because one company owns the infrastructure doesn't give them the exclusive right to offer service upon that infrastructure. So it's much cheaper for companies to enter the internet service market in the UK. And there's a few other countries where that's the case, though I can't say for certainty which countries those are. So in the UK, the speeds aren't necessarily that great, but the prices are far lower. Mm-hmm. That's one way that competition could be increased here. But obviously the industry is not really fond of the idea of being forced to let other companies use their infrastructure.
And according to Akamai, the United States speed ranks about 17th around the globe. Jessica, how would you? Why is this the case in the U.S.?
Well, I think competition is absolutely right, but I think also, you know, other countries have prioritized build out speed, affordability in ways that the U.S. hasn't quite done.
What are your thoughts on where Pai stands on mega mergers? According to a number of people, they say he's very friendly. He'll be friendly to mega mergers. How will that affect competition, speed, and price, Jessica?
Well, I've never seen him vote against a merger. And we all understand, I think, that the more these companies consolidate, the less competition there is in a space that's already rather uncompetitive, and that we get closer and closer to reuniting the bells and reaching monopoly status. And that's just not good for consumers. And this is something I think, no matter who you talk to, people who don't follow these issues at all, they understand frustration with their cable companies, with their internet service providers. And so many folks only have one choice, and it makes not only for higher prices, but for slower speeds and terrible customer service. And a lot of these companies are voted worst in customer service year after year.
And according to Business Insider, there's speculation swirling about a potential Sprint, T-Mobile, and Verizon Charter merger. And Ajit Pai did vote against the Charter-Time Warner cable merger last year, but only because he thought that the last commissioner imposed too many regulatory conditions, like preventing the company from applying data caps or charging subscribers more based on how much data they used as part of that deal. So, Clint, what would you add about mergers under Ajit Pai?
That's something I'm definitely concerned about. You mentioned the Sprint Time Warner merger, the Sprint T-Mobile merger that is rumored. That actually fell through a few years ago when it was initially proposed, and as a result, T-Mobile ended up dropping a lot of prices. They ended up doing a lot of things of really consumer-friendly things in order to become more competitive, because, you know, just merging with another company wasn't an option. They had to actually compete That ended up driving change at all four of the big carriers. So Verizon just in the last couple of weeks brought back unlimited data plans, and that's almost certainly due to T-Mobile's own unlimited data offerings. And it's impossible to say how things would have played out had Sprint and T-Mobile merged a few years ago, but it seems highly unlikely that T-Mobile would have started competing so aggressively if they hadn't found themselves in the situation where they had to, where they weren't allowed to combine with another company.
And
so if the merger goes forward, I'm sure it's going to affect competition in a bad way.
And then we've got the AT&T bid for Time Warner, which according to Ars Technica is still on the table. According to this piece, AT&T is planning to avoid an FCC review of its merger with Time Warner. Senate Democrats led by Al Franken recently asked the company to prove that the acquisition will benefit Americans. What is the status of that, Clint, and how will that affect people who use AT&T for their provider?
Well, Time Warner, so this wouldn't include Time Warner Cable. That's a completely separate company. Mm. So the main way that might end up affecting consumers, if it goes through, it would actually be more on the pay TV side, because if so Time Warner owns channels like HBO and CNN. So if it costs, say, Comcast more money to buy those channels to make them available to their customers, that could drive the rates up significantly. So that's one of the main things to watch on that front. They could also make it more difficult or impossible for digital-only video streaming services to get access to Time Warner content, so that could curb competition there in the online video space as well. But the status of it is really unclear because Donald Trump has made some comments about not being in favor of that merger, which actually probably has a lot to do with his antipathy towards CNN specifically, rather than any real consumer concerns regarding the deal. So in a lot of ways, it's going to come down to how people like Jeff Sessions at the Department of Justice and the Antitrust Division of the Department of Justice end up viewing this, and how much pressure from the top ends up being exerted on them.
Jessica, we have a comment from Pat on our Facebook page that says, I dislike how Sprint lures a customer to shift plans which never meet the expectations. I've been with them for 19 years and they provide no exceptions to loyal customers or seniors. And so many people complain whenever we have conversations about cell phone providers or cable providers, we just don't have that many choices. So when you look at all of these mergers, who do they really benefit?
The companies and their shareholders. I mean, that's really it. I think that Clint is absolutely right. What we saw T-Mobile do in the marketplace after their merger was declined was nothing short of amazing. I mean, they really have put some downward pressure on prices, and we've seen better customer service from them. I mean, I think the truth is we need to figure out ways where we can, you know, create some new entrants. There are some smaller guys, but in the meantime, we certainly can't let these big four become a big three or a big two. Hmm.
Jessica Gonzalez is Deputy Director and Senior Counsel at Free Press. Clint Finley is a writer for Wired. Today we are talking about Ajit Pai, the new chair of the FCC. This appointment did not require Senate approval, and that's why it didn't get as much attention as other Donald Trump appointments. In fact, it didn't get much attention at all. But he's been so busy since he got this job. He has reversed an Obama administration order to allow ISPs to provide discounted high-speed internet access to low-income families. He also rescinded a case that would have put a cap on phone calls in prisons. Those prices are extremely high. And if you have any questions or comments about this, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. 8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And then he said net neutrality's days are numbered, and that is what ensures that all traffic on the internet is treated equal. And I just wanted to ask you before we go back to phone calls about rescinding this case that would have capped phone prison calls at 11 cents a minute for local and long distance calls from state and federal prisons. Jessica, you were talking earlier about how expensive this is. What was the rationale behind this?
Well, what he's done here is he's refused. The FCC had an order last year and it was appealed, and he's refusing to defend the FCC decision in court, which is no big surprise. Again, Chairman Pai has acknowledged that these exorbitant rates are unjust. He said so in his dissent from the order setting rates, limits on rates and fees for prison phone calls. And so this is another example. I mean, it's sort of, we're seeing a pattern here with how he operates. He says he says the right things, but then he makes legal arguments, and he is going after the FCC's legal authority to set rates for prisons and detention centers, and he's basically making a state's rights argument here.
Wow. So at this point, because he rescinded the case, prisoners' phone calls will still cost as much as how much a minute? Did you say $19?
There were reports that 15-minute phone calls were costing families up to $17, so more than a dollar per minute for a phone call so that you can stay connected to your family, or so that, you know, kids can talk to their parents in prison or who are detained.
Well, we've got time for a couple more phone calls. Let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much, Rose. Early on in this conversation, it was mentioned that when the net neutrality debate was going on under the Obama administration, there were 4 million letters and comments that went to the FCC regarding this issue. And it seems to me that, like, there's, based on what I hear now, there's a stealth campaign to reverse all of that. And why is nothing being done about this again by the same group that went after the FCC before? It seems to me that this would be a fairly potent campaign issue in the 2018 elections.
Well, Free Press is on it. I'm guessing it's because so many people are having a hard time keeping up with everything right now. But Jessica, how would you answer that? Is there going to be another major campaign like we saw in 2015?
Oh, you better believe it. We're here to keep it. We're already working on it. I'm sorry that it hasn't reached you yet, but we will continue to build a campaign against this. I think the challenge, right, in this moment in history is that there are so many horrible things coming out of the Trump administration. And at the same time, there's been an incredible resurgence in activism. And so we are competing in some ways for attention because there's so many very, very important issues that must be addressed immediately. We have terrible executive orders coming out left and right, seems like every day. But I assure you that we will be working to build the campaign. And John, you know, I hope you will follow us and join in.
Well, thank you for that. And Clint, just briefly, what are you hearing from activists on the ground on this issue?
Almost exactly what Jessica said. Activists are definitely paying attention to it. I think we haven't quite seen the big letter writing campaign yet because there hasn't really been a specific proposal by the FCC to rescind those earlier rules. And we might not actually see them from the FCC. This may actually have to come from Congress, but it's actually somewhat difficult for the FCC to reverse certain rules, especially after they've already defended them in court. So I think that the campaign will end up having to be more focused on Congress to stop Congress from from blocking the net neutrality rules.
All right. Well, thank you again, John, and we'll definitely continue to follow this. Although I have to say, I would have missed this story if not for my daily New York Times that I try to make time to read every day because it's so hard to keep up with everything. And it was buried in a story a couple weeks ago, but it was there. Other than that, I haven't really seen much coverage. Let's go next to Drew in San Francisco. Hi, Drew. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to hear a little bit about how this might affect small businesses, startups, emerging web-based content companies. You've talked a lot about, you know, companies bordering on monopolies, you know, the Bell system, major gigantic partnerships. Mm. But for a small company trying to compete in the space, are they just going to get edged out?
Yeah, it's a great question. Jessica, what about that?
Yeah, it's absolutely a great question. I think that's why part of the reason why net neutrality is so important and why tons of small business people and so-called edge providers are in favor of it, because they understand, you know, someone selling their wares on Etsy understands that they can't compete with Walmart. If Walmart can pay internet service providers so their website reaches consumers faster than the website of a small business owner, I mean, let's be honest about how we use the internet. Even if we want to be progressive and give small businesses a chance, it's frustrating if we go to a site that doesn't work well or it's slow. And so consumers will naturally gravitate to a place where they can quickly get what they want. Mm-hmm. So it's very dangerous. It does undermine small business. It does undermine the next Google, so to speak. You know, who are those people now that are working on the next great innovation, and will they be able to realize that and actually reach, you know, the masses if they're not reaching, you know, internet users as quickly as the other companies, or, you know, if they are in one of these walled gardens or, you know, zero rated, you know, one company can get in under the zero rating veil and they can't. And so that's why I think this is so important. And just my background into this issue was I was working with Latino creators who don't feel that they've had a voice in mainstream media. And so, you know, I think it's particularly important for those people as well who feel that the open internet has allowed them to tell their stories and be heard and authentically represent themselves. And so it's the same is true for them.
Jessica Gonzalez is Deputy Director and Senior Counsel at Free Press. You can find out more about Ajit Pai and the FCC, freepress.net. Clint Finley is a writer for Wired, where he focuses on these issues. Clint and Jessica, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks again for having us.
Thanks for covering this, Rose.
Thank you. And we will definitely continue to cover this because it's also so important for independent media. And coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of the new National Security Advisor, Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. And we'll talk about the forced evacuation of the remaining Native Americans and their allies at Standing Rock. KALW produces Your Call. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Stephanie Porcel is our intern. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. You can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us.